Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, Windows 8 release date just in time for rising RAM prices. PCI Express 3, will it speed up your GPU? AMD prices are dropping, hot servers, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 178, recorded July 19th, 2012. Buy memory now before the price goes up.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs and automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TWITCH7.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, the show where we try to bring you the best, most exciting, and most important news in computer hardware each and every week on the Twitch Network. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by the man, the myth, the man who's back at home, Mr. Ryan Shroud. How you doing, man?
In town for another week. We'll be gone all next week. Actually, if everything works out well, I will be in Petaluma next week, so we can do one of our world-famous in-studio, both of us in-studio, This Week in Computer Hardware episodes.
Everybody's like, they're so much snappier when they're in the same room. It's like, yes, because we don't have milliseconds of delay in between each of us. It's
actual kind of human interaction going on.
That's crazy stuff. It's been kind of an interesting week. We're going to start with a piece of software news just to change things up. That news, of course, being Windows 8 is going on sale October 26, 2012. Upgrade fee of $39.95 or $40, as we like to call it on Techzilla. I like how they save the date. October 26, 2012 is the general availability of Windows 8. So I'm assuming that Windows 8 is done.
It seems done.
Or as done as it's going to be. As I've said before, I will say it again, shortcuts. If you're using Windows 8 on the desktop, learn your shortcuts. It makes a huge difference in the way it behaves for you. I actually, it's growing on me. Although the truth is I don't spend a lot of time in the Metro interface when I'm using it on my desktop. Using it on a tablet in the Metro interface sings. Sings, I say. It sings not so much when you're using it in a traditional desktop computing environment. And I got to say, I'm still getting used to like full screen applications that refuse to scale to smaller windows. Apparently, I don't work the way the future works when it comes to computer applications.
So October 26th is pretty close. I think maybe also worth reiterating. I know we've mentioned the price before, the $39, but I think maybe news to me, maybe some news to others, that's for upgrade or full install, right? Like it's $39 is the cost of Windows 8.
I thought it was for upgrade, but it is for a full install. That's actually pretty insane.
The news we got said that it was for both upgrade and full install. Like they were just basically going with the single price model. Which would be good, right? And I think it, you know, Microsoft's main goal is to get the touch interface, the Metro interface, in as many people's hands as possible, so that developers will want to actually write applications for that Metro interface. Because one of the benefits to Microsoft when people adopt this Metro interface is that it's very, very easy then to cross compile for the ARM architecture versus the x86 architecture, right? So once developers are steadily into the Metro interface and kind of, you know, how all that coding and all those requirements are, they'll be able to write apps for both platforms much more easily than, you know, if they have to kind of depend on the standard Windows environment, you know, with Windows 7 and all that other kind of stuff and supporting many, many different kinds of ecosystems at the same time.
I wait with bated breath. I'm also still like trying to find the actual blog listing on the... Oh, there's the Windows Team blog. There it is.
Wow. Hopefully that's...
I could have swore it was $40 for an upgrade.
$40 price. For just the upgrade?
$40 for just the upgrade. Starting at general availability, if your PC is running Windows XP, Windows Vista, or Windows 7, you will qualify to download an upgrade to Windows 8 Pro for just $39.99 in 131 markets. And if you want, you can add Windows Media Center for free through the Add Features option within Windows 8 Pro after your update. Windows 8 Upgrade Assistance. If you prefer to shop at a local store, a packaged DVD version of the upgrade to Windows 8 Pro will be available for $69.99 during this promotion. Oh, and by the way, if you're not upgrading from a prior version of Windows and are building your own PC or installing Windows 8 in a virtual machine or a separate partition, you will be able to purchase and install the Windows 8 and Windows 8 Pro System Builder product. So...
no pricing on that, though. I mean, it sounds like they've got all their bases covered in terms of what you know, the availability is going to be. And I think even if it's like the $69 price you listed there, that's much more sustainable and reasonable than kind of when Windows 7 was first released in OEM. You know, like to get a hold of a retail copy, it was $160, $170 if you were building a new system, that type of thing. I think it'll be better. If it's not that exact $39 amount, which I'm really hoping it is. I mean, most people are going to have a copy of Windows 7 anyway that they can use as an upgrade, jumping off, right? So,
although I always love those sorts, like, will my Windows 7 upgrade disk work as a do I need my Windows XP that I use for my Windows 7 so I get my Windows 8 upgrade?
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. More stuff to figure out come October.
Oh, my goodness. DRAM price is expected to rise. I was going to give you an elegant segue there, but I just blew it. Short answer is back in 2008, 2009, 2010, markets crashing. People stopped buying PCs. Memory manufacturers quit adding capacity. Q2012, people are buying computers. Businesses are buying computers again. I'm not going to say the recession's over, but certainly people are spending more money than they were in 2009, early 2010. And, of course, memory companies have not been adding fab capacity. And, of course, our little friends, the SSD drives, have been coming out of the woodwork left and right, exciting people. You know, memory, as the opening line from Tim Berry's article on PCPro.com, the memory market has traditionally seen razor-thin margins and cheap prices. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting. If you go into, if you start digging down into the articles on there, iSupply basically says inventory is decreasing. And some of the estimates I saw, basically like Micron bought Elpida memory. Demand seems to be either staying the same or on the rise, but the estimate I saw was only putting it at maybe 10% increase between now and the end of the year. But any kind of increase on memory is something we haven't seen in quite some time.
I mean, memory has just been so cheap for so long. Right. It's not really completely analogous to the hard drive change that we had, because there was a natural disaster that caused a lot of issues in the hard drive supply chain. But for the memory, it won't shock me if prices go up a little bit in Q3 and Q4. I don't think it's going to be super dramatic. One of the ways that you can kind of like a totally tertiary way to view it is like we were looking at Amazon EC2 server instances and how they're priced out, and you can get, like, they just lowered all their prices by like 50% based on high memory loads, but only like 12% in terms of high CPU loads. So, like, their predictions are memory is going to continue to be cheap for the foreseeable future. Processing power is still going to be expensive for the foreseeable future. Those are kind of like interesting metrics when you talk about companies that buy thousands and thousands and thousands of these units and stuff. So, I don't think consumers will need to worry too much about a return to $400 DRAM kits. Or anything like that.
No, at this point, I mean, I'll be shocked if they hit like $50 by the end of the year.
Exactly.
What could be more expensive, or maybe not, is PRAM memory. Alan Malventano wrote about Intel talking about PRAM memory, I want to say 3 years ago. PRAM memory, according to Jeremy Hellstrom's article up on PCPro.com, quote, offers two major benefits over the current RAM on the market. The first being its lack of volatility. It's crystals, baby. Crystals, baby. The crystals form and they don't care if the power is on or off. It's pretty cool, right? The idea that you have memory that is non-volatile. Volatile means when you shut your computer off, the memory basically wipes itself out. requires electricity to maintain its state. PRAM, this crystalline RAM, will actually maintain its state. The second is that despite the fact that it's crystals, it should be faster than DRAM. Quote, it may seem odd that a technology which requires the formation of crystals would be faster than the electronic flipping of bits, but Micron claims that the trickle of voltage supplied creates seed crystals, which speed the formation process during the write cycles. The Inquirer apparently has heard that Micron has a goodly supply of PRAM to sell, which probably means it's going to be showing up in the none-too-distant future. I, of course, am assuming that this is not going to require a specialized controller. If it does, we're going to find it in specialized products. But it's a really interesting idea that after all these years of traditional RAM, we are going to start looking at something. Literally, it's phase change. I mean, last time I dealt with any product that was phase change in a personal computer, it was actually disk memory.
And right.
Just like, you know, long-term storage, glass platters. So that's pretty exciting. So it's interesting. The Inquirer.net article basically says Intel's been working on this. 45-nanometer PCM chips are available in 1 gigabyte PCM plus a 512 LPDDR2 package for mobile devices. And Micron says it can improve boot time, lower power consumption, and has extremely high reliability. I'm really
That's always good.
Curious. Yeah. Yeah. I want to see it.
We go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it looks like it's going to be showing up in phones and tablets first. So
there you go.
We have a
conglomeration of graphics GPU news. No new launches, really. No new GPU launches, but we had some stuff we wanted to bring up here. First, kind of a summary of price changes from the AMD world, which is really nice to see. Something we kind of expected since the launch of the NVIDIA Kepler GTX 600 series of GPUs back in March, but is now kind of official. Right. So last month we talked about the 7970 gigahertz edition GPU. This was kind of like the new high-end single GPU SKU from AMD. They were going to compete against the 680. Now, what's cool about that is that the original HD 7970 is going to cost you $429. The 7950 is going to be $349. And then on down the line, the 7870, $299, that kind of thing. So what's interesting here is the 7970, the base model, is now $70 less than the GTX 680. Is the GTX 680 a faster card? Yes. Does it have a little bit more interesting feature set with things like the ability to limit your frame rates and that kind of thing? Yes. But when you start talking about a $70 price difference, you begin to have these debates again, which is exactly what AMD wants. They don't want people to go, oh, obviously the 680 is the better card. So now the 7970... is a much more attractive option for just a high-end gamer. Also of note, the GTX 670 from NVIDIA is $399, and it tended to perform just a little bit below the 7970. So that kind of gives you an idea of why they priced the 7970 where they did. It's a little bit above the GTX 670, but significantly below the GTX 680. And the 7950 at $350 is also really telling. And it may present more troubles for NVIDIA than people realize, because NVIDIA doesn't have a card under $399 that's like of their new generation, right? They don't have a Kepler card except for the GTX 670. And you go all the way back down to the GT 640, which is not a good card at all. So, you know, if you start getting into the, I need something for under $350 or for under $400, 7950 is where you're going to look at for that. So that's good news. It kind of changes how everything's going, right? So will we see NVIDIA kind of make changes? We'll see the GTX 60 or GTX 660 series, 650 series, and how, you know, that all kind of pans out there. But we'll kind of wait and see how that goes. The other bit of news we had was of a Sapphire 7970 graphics card that has six gigs of frame buffer on it. Gigs of frame buffer. I don't really know. You know,
six
we talked
is
about
bigger
this,
than three
it, by a factor of two. You know, we discussed this on the podcast last night. It was really more of this is only useful if you are doing three of like these 27-inch monitors or 30-inch monitors, right? Even if you're doing triple 1080p, chances are 3 gigs is enough, right? And there could be some fringe cases where 6 gigs is really going to help you a lot. But I would wager to say that you'd have to be pushing triple 27 or triple 30-inch monitors to really see a dramatic need, even close to a need for a 6 gigabyte frame buffer. The card also has some pretty cool features, like the ability to overclock, I think as high as 1200 megahertz, 1.2 gigahertz clock speed, which is pretty sweet. The base clock speed of a 7970 is 925.
It's cool, but I got a funny feeling that 90% of these cards are going to end up attached to like 24-inch 1080p monitors with somebody going, you know, I got 6 gigabytes of RAM in that card.
It is a bragging point, no doubt. But it's going to be expensive too. I think I don't have my laptop just rebooted on me while I was doing this discussion, so I don't have the price in front of me. But I think it was like 680 bucks. Is that right?
Yes.
So I mean, that's
not cheap.
That's a $250 increase over a base 7970. You really must think you need the extra frame buffer to really kind of justify that. So, which is interesting.
MSI R7870 Hawk reviewed and Crossfire performance. Basically, it's the 7870 on steroids, says Josh Walrath over at PC Perspective. Quote, the first R5770 Hawk that I reviewed just simply blew me away. The R7870 Hawk is the direct descendant of that card, and the pedigree shows. It's all the things that the original was, but a whole lot more. Bigger, faster, louder, and more expensive. I'm not entirely sure all these are positives, says Josh, but I also think that a user does get quite a bit for the money spent. Well, Tony, if you go to the last page of the article, got a piece of silver PC Perspective Award, and you start thinking about just exactly how much bigger cards have gotten in some cases over the last couple of years.
Yeah, some of those comparison photos are intense.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's like a quarter bigger. It's thicker. It's just, yeah, you just look at those like, that's an awfully big card. It's got another heat pipe. It's longer. It's got a more sophisticated cooling system. In terms of Crossfire performance, I was very impressed, says Josh. The card scaled well in the variety of applications I tested with. Better yet, AMD must have put some secret sauce in their latest HD7000 implementation, because I did not notice micro stutter as I did with the HD6900 series. So definitely a card worth considering, even if you play Metro 2033, which is a game I like to tease because I'm cruel.
I can't bring up the show notes for me, but the internet doesn't seem to work on my laptop, but it's obviously still working if I'm talking to you. So what's on the next? What's next on the story list? Oh, okay, there we go.
So yeah, Hard OCP has some bad news for, quote, current or expecting Ivy Bridge users. The whole PCI Express 3.0 thing is not going to make your games run faster. So I've clicked through to the PCI. Basically, it's Hard OCP. Kyle and the crew over at Hard OCP beat down on PCI Express 2.0 versus 3.0, looking at GPU gaming performance. And the short answer is it ain't going to make your cards run faster. We're looking at GeForce GTS 680, Radeon HD 7970s, in TriSLI and TriFire, if you want to get serious. And there's a lot of good, like with any set of hard OCP testing, there's a lot of good information in there. But basically, they set about to find the highest gameplay settings they can play on both systems, basically to see if there was any actual real-world benefit to the higher cap on bandwidth that PCI Express 3.0 delivered. Quote, in all of our testing, we experienced a consistent performance improvement on the PCI Express 3.0 system with the game of Max Payne 3 with a GTX 680 GPU. It started with a single video card performing, wait for it, 4% faster. When they ran an SLI, it increased to 6% faster. And when they tested GeForce GTX 3-way SLI, it increased 8.5%.
Wow.
Didn't follow suit with it. Yeah, it's just, as we tested more and more games and configurations, we found that more often than not, we were seeing a more positive result in performance under the PCI Express 3.0 system with the 680 versus the 7970. Yeah, there were some instances in the testing where the PCI Express 2.0 platform seemed to be a few percent faster than the PCI Express 3.0. They did a lot of testing.
And I was just going to reiterate, like, this is kind of something we kind of assumed, especially since this generation of graphics card, like, it's always the case that the first generation that adopts a new PCI Express standard is really not going to see a performance difference, especially not with single GPU. And I had a guess that, you know, it was going to take triple cards with, you know, really stretching that 2 gigabyte and 3 gigabyte frame buffers to really even kind of start to see that performance difference. So it doesn't surprise me that it took three-way SLI and three-way Crossfire to even get, you know, anywhere close to like a double-digit performance difference.
I'm just sad.
Well, you don't have to be sad. That means people can save money, right? You don't have to buy Ivy Bridge. It's not really going to help you out that much. And you can stick with Sandy Bridge, I guess.
Fine. Intel adds a 240 gigabyte model to Intel SSD 330 series and lower prices. That's pretty self-explanatory. If you want to get the deets on the price changes, you can check out Jeremy Hellstrom's article up on PCPer.com. Basically, hey, man, more SSDs, and basically there's now 60, 120, 180, and 240 gigabyte drive options in Intel's 330 series. And a little more exciting, the new IndieLynx Barefoot 3 controller from OCZ came out of the earnings call. Tim Berry wrote that up at PCPer.com. And where did it go? That controller is especially intriguing because it is reportedly being internally developed and will use a new Aragon SSD processor, which is a controller chip running at 400 megahertz with an optimized and customs RISC instruction set. The Aragon core is a further 32-bit chip based on TSMC's 65-nanometer process. Quote, using a certain IP that is being licensed from an as-yet-unnamed third party. Allegedly, it is able to execute most instructions and branches in a single clock cycle. That is a big deal. I like this note. Bearing in mind that this is an announcement to shareholders, OCZ has stated the following about the new controller. Quote, when implemented in an SSD controller, this gives the core much higher performance than when using an off-the-shelf embedded safety field. This design opens a world of new possibilities for game-changing SSD solutions as it supports unprecedented level of processing power. Should show up by Q4, basically on the street, 2012. You know, and I think Tim made a good point. Like, basically, this is the president of the company going, I want the value of my company to go up. I want you to drive the individual share value up, 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 because I'm promising you that later this year, we are going to change the industry with our, you know. So, take it with a grain of salt. But it'll be fun. It would be cool if they came up with something amazing and not profoundly expensive or anything.
Just as a total aside here, I know we talked about falling SSD prices again last week too. Right. That continues to be the case. I believe OCZ at microcenter.com is running a special on their Vertex 4 drives where you can get a 256 gig SSD, their Vertex 4 for $199, I believe. Wow. So we're talking 77 cents per gigabyte.
Getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
Speaking of cheaper and cheaper, Crucial MSATA, basically Crucial as their newest MSATA, Micron, my apologies, has a new 256 gigabyte MSATA. The SSD review has it pretty thoroughly benchmarked. I had realized if you click on the link actually in the show notes, you will see the PCMark Vantage ACD suites for all the MSATA drives. And it's pretty insane when you look at the SSD review. They've tested like SanDisk, Toshiba, Kingston, Samsung, MyDigital, ADATA, Intel. It's an unbelievable selection of ACD suites. But the 240 gigabyte Micron C400 is just trailing the MyDigital SSD Smart 256 gigabyte in performance, followed by the 128 gigabyte Micron C400. Followed by Memorite, Runcore, and the Samsung PM830 SATA 3 running at 256 gigabytes. So there is I had not realized how many mSATA drives were out on the market until I caught this review up, the SSD review. By the way, I've gotten a couple of questions. People are like, USB 3.0 is so exciting. Why aren't there USB 3.0 flash drives? And there are, actually. And there's a review of a SuperTalent drive and Kingston drive linked up on PCPer.com if you want to track them down. But, cool. It's interesting. Yes, there are USB 3.0 drives. SuperTalent's actually is pretty affordable. Quote, the two drives we have to review today are the SuperTalent Express 3.0 SD1 4GB and the Express 3.0 SD2 8GB. And that review is actually up on Legit Reviews, pardon me, not PCPer.com. So the 3.0 drives are starting to come out, I won't say in volume, but they're getting easier to find. You'll probably have to shop for them online unless you have a particularly well-equipped computer store in your area. Who loves the Retina display, Ryan? Do you love the Retina display? I honestly couldn't tell.
I know. And to be honest with you, I can't really tell yet because I really love... basically, I did a short little write-up, a little one-page article that looked at the 15-inch MacBook Pro with the Retina display, 2880 by 1800 resolution, but purely running Windows on it, right? So I installed Boot Camp and got all the drivers and all that kind of stuff up and running. And it was a mixed bag. Like... in its default configuration, the truth of the matter is that resolution is too high for a screen that size. The right. Pixel density is great for looking at images and photos, but when you start getting into actually utilizing it for text, icons, reading websites, that kind of stuff, it's just too small, right? Everything just appears too small. And you can adjust the DPI settings in Windows and get around that. And Apple obviously did a good job OS. Well, you know, a lot of people, including myself, gave Apple some crap because you're really only running a resolution of 19 by 12 that is double, right? You're getting quadrupled, I guess. You're getting 4 pixels for every single pixel. Is that right? Or is it 2? I don't want to do the math right now. But they're doing the same thing. They're sharpening the image as opposed to actually giving you more pixel usable space. Right. And if you look through that story I posted, you'll see some pictures of here it is running at 2880 by 1800. And here's a picture of that same screen set at 1920 by 1200. And you'll see some of the differences. Yeah, we've even got a screenshot I did run, although it didn't run very well. I did run Skyrim at 2880 by 1800 on a 15-inch screen. It looked amazing. It was a slideshow of sorts, but each frame looked amazing.
Flick, and then I got roasted by a dragon. Flick. Well, it's kind of funny, right? Because one of the things that I certainly heard Leo and several other people say, you might know Leo Laporte from Twit.
I've heard of him, yeah.
It's kind of funny. I've heard a lot of people be like, this is amazing, and there need to be more Retina, you know, native applications. Because I have all these pixels, but... I'm just sort of scaling everything, except for my giant photographs. Oh, my goodness. I'm trying to edit a giant photograph on a 15-inch panel. Okay, I'm going to plug in my desktop monitor, in which case your desktop monitor is probably lower in resolution than your 15-inch flat panel monitor, which brings us back to Ryan's frustration and pain over having so many pixels in such a small space. Like I'm really wondering whether we're going to see Retina displays on everything from Apple's notebook lineup in the next couple of years, or if this is going to be one of those things where they did this really peculiar computer and then nobody really talks about it next year.
Right. So I think maybe with a little bit of tweaking, the Windows operating system on that Retina MacBook would be really, really, really sweet. I just think it needs a little more tweaking. And I kind of just did a here's what you get out of the box type of experience. The hardware is great, as is usually the case with all the Apple MacBooks and laptops and that kind of stuff. The hardware is fantastic and really doesn't have many competitors in the PC side. But from a usability standpoint, Apple's obviously not spending a lot of time making sure that it works really well in a Windows 7 boot camped environment. So
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, kind of weird. We had a couple of quick... I wanted to mention a couple of quick things here. We'll talk about our sponsor today, who has a really cool announcement. Next weekend... So all next week, I'll be out in San Jose, San Francisco, Santa Clara area, whatever, in the Bay Area. And on Saturday at the Fry's in Sunnyvale, which is, I guess, where's the address here? San... Or no. East Arquez Avenue, 1077 East Arquez Avenue, Sunnyvale, California. Asus is holding a Republic of Gamers event. There are going to be prizes. There's going to be events, informational things inside the store, in the parking lot, under some tents and that kind of deal. And Asus, Patriot, Antec, NVIDIA, they're all going to be on hand doing demonstrations and giving away stuff. And I'm actually going to be there on Saturday. I don't know exactly what time yet to host a discussion panel between all these companies, kind of going over what they think the direction of hardware is going in and that kind of stuff. So, you know, we'll have a rep from Asus and Patriot and Antec and NVIDIA on stage. And I will attempt to ask some questions that will embarrass them in front of all these people and get as much information as possible out. So that I will be there on the, I guess that's the 28th is the Saturday. So
cool.
Should be fun.
He's back in California, ladies and gentlemen.
At least a little bit.
Hey.
And in August, I'll be back in Texas. Driving again back to Texas. I'll be driving to Dallas for QuakeCon. This will be I'll just mention it real quick because I know we've got a couple more weeks before we get there. QuakeCon 2012, August 2nd through the 5th, I believe, are the dates. If you've never been, it's really cool. It's completely free. BYOC LAN party. I don't know if maybe that gets enough attention. They don't charge you to get in. You can pay extra for like to jump the line and to get t-shirts and little extras and that kind of stuff. But if you just want to go for free, you can absolutely register and sign up and go for free and play PC games all weekend and on great connections with great crowds of people and that kind of stuff. It's a really, really fun event. And that's why we are hosting our hardware workshop there again on Saturday, August the 4th. And we'll have, if you go to pcper.com/workshop, you'll get some information on that. And you'll see a list of kind of all the prizes that we've got so far. That list is growing. So far, I think our flagship giveaways, we have 100 AMD processors to give away. Really? Processor in a box, 100 AMD processors. So it'll be interesting.
Ladies and gentlemen, we love your email questions. We're going to answer a couple in just a minute. Twitch, T-W-I-C-H at twit.tv is the email address. So please keep sending those to us. We'll answer as many as we can on the show. We should also take a moment to thank our friends at Squarespace. Squarespace is sponsoring this edition of This Week in Computer Hardware. Ryan, can you tell folks a little bit more about Squarespace?
I absolutely can. This is actually, it's really interesting advertisement. And as so, I may be looking down at the copy a little bit more, but it's because they are launching a whole new revision to their product. They're calling it the new Squarespace.com. Faster and easier than ever to create that high quality website or blog that you've always wanted. So they're basically launching a new content management system called the new Squarespace. From a technical perspective, the new Squarespace is an entirely new product with a different code base. So maybe it doesn't mean a lot to people who aren't software developers. When you talk about a completely new code base, that usually means a lot of work went into this. It uses the latest web technologies like HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript foundations. From a user perspective, the new Squarespace gives you and your website the best mobile experience as well. So now your website can be very easily or automatically formatted for desktop use, tablet use, and phone use, without having to do a whole lot of work. That's kind of like the epitome of what Squarespace really does for you. Squarespace developed new templates with mobile-ready responsive designs. Your site automatically restructures to any size device so it looks professionally designed no matter how it is viewed. I am completely jealous of that feature. The designs are seamlessly and transparently baked into each master template. The images are automatically versioned 7 ways to accommodate viewing, editing, and updating on any sized mobile device. So you upload a high quality photo and it creates 7 different versions that will be used on 7 different categories of devices, right? Depending on if you're using desktop, iPad, Android tablet, whatever it is, you know, they figured out a way to do it. It's really, really cool. The new Squarespace is faster and easier to use, has beautiful templates with 100% drag and drop functionality for all the customization tools for both site design and for content creation in that site design. The new page builder tool called Layout Engine that enables you to customize pages in seconds by adding blocks of content such as photos, videos, text, social media, and immediately preview the layout as you go. This makes it even easier for anyone to build a site. It really is kind of simple. Like we've been showing clips of the video off and on during the ad read, and I watched the video before the show started today, and it's really impressive how simple it is to just kind of drag and drop text and images and videos and widgets in and around things. For example, you can automatically pull photos from Instagram into your site, instantly sync pages and galleries to Facebook, auto-publish new blog entries on Twitter, automatically import, sync, and publish to and from all of those social media networks with a few clicks. It's really, really cool. Social media buttons for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox, all that kind of stuff. Squarespace has an award-winning design team with user experience experts, and they've 300 fonts now, 50 new and improved features on this version of Squarespace. It's really cool. If Squarespace is something you've tried before, it's worth going back and trying again with this new, completely new code base as it is. And of course, as always, it is completely free to try. All you have to do is go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card. You just try it out. You start building your website. You can see how this new Squarespace is changing things, right? How easy it is to move things around. Just on the video version, we're showing the video, and it's just incredibly cool to see how well this all kind of works together and how it all works with desktops and mobile devices. So after you try it out, you come to love the Surface. When you decide to purchase it, if you use offer code TWICH7, that's TWICH7, you'll get 10% off your first purchase on new Squarespace accounts, which includes monthly and annual plans. And don't forget about free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. That's squarespace.com, offer code TWICH7. And we thank Squarespace for their amazing technology and their support of This Week in Computer Hardware.
Thank you, Squarespace. Ladies and gentlemen, go out, check out Squarespace today if you haven't already. Normally, we would begin with a viewer question, but I actually have a question for the Twitch audience. And I wanted to hear back from you at Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv, or you can hit me at Patrick Norton if you'd like to send a tweet at Ryan. You can also hit Ryan at Ryan Shrout. Ryan and I being profoundly creative when it comes to our online social personas.
Just easier.
But it's been interesting. I last year moved to the East Bay. If you are not familiar with the peculiar weather here in Northern California, that means I went from an average summer temperature of like 58 degrees in San Francisco living under the fog bank to like 75, 80 degrees, which is cool. My son actually experienced summer for the first time. But it's been really interesting because I just transplanted the box we use as a server. Which is a little overkill because it's essentially my desktop gaming PC, which also serves all of our home media and does all of our transcribing. It's the big monster box. It's got like 4 3-terabyte drives inside of it. It's got 2 Blu-ray drives and a half dozen DVD drives I use when I, basically re-rip my 900 CD collection because I'm a freak. But it's been amazing. My wife comes up to me this morning and says, "I left the front closet door open." I'm like, "Was it really hot in there?" And she goes, "Yes, entirely too hot to get a coat out because it was actually cold outside." So when you take an Intel 920 with like 4 or 5 hard drives inside of it and leave it in a 4-foot by 3-foot closet or however big the closet is, it gets really hot. So I'm curious, obviously I can go to a smaller processor. I can go to one of the newer processors from Intel or AMD that consumes less power. I can pull the GPU out of the gaming box. I can try to figure out, I could possibly water cool it, although the water cooler is still going to dissipate all the heat, all of the heat from the computer. So it's not like there's going to be less heat if I water cool it. It just means all of the water cooling heat's going to come from somewhere else. So I'm curious what people have done to keep their servers cool if they have them in non-air-conditioned parts of the house. Although it occurs to me if I put it in the basement, it would probably, in our basement area, it would probably solve a lot of the heating issues. It would probably also be eaten by a small animal because we have a crawl space, not a basement. So I'm sure something would try to snuggle up to it at night.
What's that sound?
It's a possum.
You could always put like a bathroom-style vent in the top of the closet. But that's a lot of work. I mean, that's...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not a very creative construction person, especially compared to you. So I would just move it because I'm lazy. But I'm very curious to see what kind of creative ideas others can come up with.
And I do want to say I love the idea of water cooling it and putting the radiator outside the house, but I'm pretty sure that's not going to... Although I could put the radiator, Oh, I can put the radiator in the crawl space. Well, that's got potential.
That's a long distance for problems to happen.
No. See, it's a one-story house, man. It's just like 6 or 8 inches. I can do
okay.
this.
Okay. All right.
Totally do this. in any case, Twitch, T-W-I-C-H, twit.tv is the email address. We got an email from Billy who wants to remind everybody to clean out your systems. A little background. With the guidance of this show, the hardware leaderboard, and the interweb forums, I built myself a lovely new system for Christmas a little while ago. Gigabyte Z68MA D2HB3, a Core i5 2500K, 8 gigabytes DDR3, 120 gigabyte OCC Agility 3 SSD, and a 1 terabyte spinning disk. This box was used strictly as a Hackintosh build until I realized I wanted to play some games. Funny how that works. Added a Windows partition, grabbed a secondhand Radeon 5770, and got to gaming, except OMG, my system now sounded like a jet, with idle temps on the GPU at 70 degrees and loads above 95 degrees, in fear of my desk about to explode from the heat. I decided to write about better cooling options for this older graphics card. Then I decided maybe I should take it apart. I doubt the 18-year-old kid I bought it from ever did. Found, quote, half a cat clocked in the heat sink, unquote. Note to all listeners and viewers, clean the inside of the cases, inside of your case. It will save you time and money. Idle temps are now below 45 degrees and 75 degrees at load, and I'm actually getting good frame rates. Wow.
Half a cat is a significant portion of a cat. I should know.
Don't store your computer on the floor if you can avoid it. Don't put your computer underneath your desk if you can avoid it. If you do, and especially if you have animals, because it's amazing, like dust bunnies somehow manage to get sucked in through any available hole in the side of a PC case.
You know, I'm pretty lucky in the fact that I build new computers frequently enough that I don't have any kind of buildup like that. But having worked in the computer field for as long as I have, you know, I've seen some pretty awful things, and although you can't believe all of them on the internet, I've seen some pretty awful, like, photos of guess what somebody brought into the repair shop type of thing, right? So
I opened up a case once, and I thought there was a rabbit inside the case, and then we realized, like, somebody reached over and poked it with a pencil, and the pencil went all the way through. And then they reached in and pulled it out. It was just this giant mass of cat hair. It was like the ultimate, you know, it wasn't even a dust bunny. It was like a dust horse. It was just this giant mass of cat hair.
Kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it? Like, don't do that. Don't let that be you. Right. So when I go to QuakeCon, maybe I'll walk around the BYOC and I'll just like find the dirtiest, most disgusting case, and then somehow mock them / get them some hardware and be like, why would you not only have a computer like this, but also bring it into a place where thousands of people are going to walk by? And
people have allergies.
Right. Yeah. There you go. So I'll walk around with one of those surgeon's masks on, and then I will find the worst one. Because I bet, unfortunately, Patrick, I bet there are going to be some that would require it. You never know. No.
Bring a vacuum. Yep. One last question before we go.
Sure.
Okay. David's got an email about turning his truck into a hotspot. He says, hello, Patrick and Ryan. I have a bit of, excuse me, he says, hello, Ryan and Patrick. Apparently, I'm putting myself first. I apologize. Hello, Ryan and Patrick. I have a bit of an odd question, but you guys can hopefully answer it for me. As you may know, some of the new Fords have the USB port you can plug a 3G modem into to turn the vehicle into an access point. I should point out, whatever we say from here on, that we have in the past been sponsored by Ford. So we should make our little note there that we have been sponsored by Ford. Everybody knows we've been sponsored by Ford. If you talk to Ford, be sure to mention Twitch or Techzilla or PC Per. So getting back to the question, David says, I would like to set up something like it in my 2005 Ranger. Can you recommend a wireless access point or router that I'd be able to plug my Ting 3G modem into? I just checked their website and they are no longer offering the hotspot device, and a hotspot is not really what I'm looking for anyway. Thank you for the great show. Keep up the good work, David. So it's kind of funny because I could have sworn. If you're not familiar with it, Ting's a really interesting company. They are a reseller of, and I should point out, I've actually been sponsored by Ting on Techzilla. If you've never seen it, Ting.com is a really interesting idea where they're going to make you basically buy the hardware at full price, but they offer you really inexpensive plans. And instead of always charging you for 120 minutes or 1,000 minutes a month, if you use 20 minutes a month, you pay like $3 a month. If you use 1,000 minutes a month, you pay $18 a month. If you only use 100 minutes, you pay $3, even if you're up for the sort of $18 plan. They scale things so they do it with minutes, text messages, and megabytes. It's like a gigabyte for $24, 3 gigs for $60. So if the idea is that Ting's going to allow you to save considerable money on your, if it works the way it's supposed to, you're going to save considerable money, but you're going to have to buy hardware up front. You're not transferring hardware. And the only hotspot they actually have is the Huawei Express Mobile hotspot, which is one I don't think I've seen too many other places. It's certainly not one of the premier hotspots that you'd find at a Sprint store. So there have been Crosspoint, I want to say, does a 3G router. Nope. 3G router. 3G. Okay. 3GStore.com is what we're looking for here. 3G store. Hopefully this. Yeah, it's funny. I'm kind of like hoping they still make these because there used to be a huge demand for these until the MiFi sort of integrated router started showing up, and then demand for these kind of dropped off the side of a cliff. So Cradle Point, ladies and gentlemen, would be the name I'm looking for.
Yes, I have one of those actually.
Yeah. And they still have... So if we go to 3GStore.com...
3G and 4G.
There it is. Cradle Point wireless and home router, 3G, 4G router. That's a, oh, cool. So, okay, these have integrated moments. Cradle Point CTR35 wireless and portable router. That is currently selling for $59.99. But that would be the name that comes to mind as being one of the better options out there. D-Link did one that they basically stopped supporting almost immediately after it was released.
Oh, really?
Okay, the PHS300 is no longer available. The CTR35 wireless. Oop, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that was the one I had, but this CTR35 looks very similar to it, right? So it's got the USB port, yeah. It's got an Ethernet port, it's got your power and that kind of stuff. And they even have a bundle that sells with a cigarette lighter adapter power plug as well.
Or a 12-hour battery, which is pretty funny. You buy your $150 battery to go with your $59 modem. We need
times.
A Manhattan Project for batteries, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, that would be my recommendation. If you don't want to buy a new router, or if you're locked into a 2-year plan on your 3G modem, because the MiFi device is amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, those are obviously the two alternatives, right? You get a MiFi type device. If you're going to buy something new, right, that would be what I would do at this point. I don't think I would ever see any particular advantage to having a USB-based device unless you wanted to be able to change which router you use or something like that between it. But I remember when I bought my Cradle Point, it was before kind of like the MiFi trend began, and you only had these USB ones, and these devices existed to basically allow you to share those types of things, which is pretty cool. My Verizon 4G hotspot is something like I can't live without it, right? Whether or not I'm traveling for personal or for business purposes, like that is with me all the time. And I did buy one of those big extended batteries for it because I was like, all right, I'm going to need 6 or 7 hours a day based off of this. So,
yeah, it's funny. I actually gave up on my, I had Sprint for years and years until they finally put a cap. They got rid of the unlimited data on their 4G, which for me was the time to quit because I was paying just as much as I would in Verizon, getting just the same small amount of data as I would in Verizon, but I was getting it much slower. So I found Sprint to be, and that's one of the downsides of Sprint is they're using, or Ting is that they're using Sprint's 4G, which is impossibly slow compared to Verizon or even AT&T. If you are buying a new wireless router from Sprint, I'm hoping the Sierra Wireless 4G LTE Tri-Fi hotspot is a lot better than the Wireless Overdrive Pro. I think Sierra Wireless makes fabulous products, but I got to say the Overdrive Pro is one of the worst products I have ever used.
I know you've had a lot of problems with that, and we had one that actually Ken's dad had that we had a lot of problems with as well.
It wasn't until about the second firmware update that I could start charging it without with the battery cover in place, because it would overheat. I would have to basically charge it upside down with the battery cover open. The battery life was atrocious. Cradlepoint CTR35 wireless and portable router from 3gstore.com. It'll cost you $60 and pretty much do exactly what you want, David. And you could get really slick and wire it into the car underneath the... basically, you can wire it under the seats or up under the dashboard, because you'll get plenty of coverage from the Wi-Fi in that. And then I would run a USB cable to it, and then run a USB cable up so that your 3G stick, your 3G USB stick, is somewhere up near the windshield. So, and if you want to get really cool, then you get a Wilson Electronics booster for that, and you can travel the highways, and everyone can get their internet on. Oh, my goodness. Great. Ladies and gentlemen, we should probably end the show before we start getting into more questions, especially since we spent a lot of time talking about traveling issues at the beginning of the show. Twitch, TWICH, at twit.tv is the email address. Do us a favor. If you enjoy the show, pass the link from where you download it onto your friends. We'd really appreciate that. What's coming up on PC Per this week, man?
So I'm going to be gone all next week, so it'll be interesting to see what kind of content we can get up and posted around on that. I am going to have a review of a Galaxy GTX 670 4GB graphics cards instead of 2 gigs, 4 gigs. We will be able to see, you know, kind of how and where and if that frame buffer difference actually makes itself known in higher resolution computing environments, I guess. And then what else we have up? I'm looking over here. Oh, we've got an MSI Thunderbolt-based motherboard and a couple of Z77 boards as well. And then more QuakeCon preparations, which maybe not as very exciting to the readers, but it takes up a lot of time here. That's for sure.
It's funny how that works. Oh, my goodness. We actually have a new Ultrabook in for testing.
Cool.
Yeah, the Acer Aspire S5 Ultrabook, which I'm looking forward to getting my grubby little paws on. And we got some Project E-Stripe stuff, because the Raspberry Pi I ordered several years ago, I exaggerate greatly, I ordered a couple months ago, finally arrived. So we're going to be getting our Raspberry Pi booting on, which sounds much more naughty than I intended it to. We're going to look at the Acer Aspire S5, and we got some more shiny stuff coming up, including a very exciting episode of HC Nation that I cannot tell you about just yet. That's all coming up at techzilla.com. Twit.tv/twitch is the URL. If for some reason you stumbled across this show and you don't know where to find it, twit.tv/twitch is where you find it. PCPer.com is where you find Ryan. Techzilla.com is where you find me. And that's it for this edition of Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shroud.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.